Twitch. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there and good afternoon, everybody, from coast to coast. Glad to have you along with us here at the Guy James Show today. My, oh my, it's raining cats and dogs outside today. I don't know what's up with the weather here in Southwest Florida, but we're certainly getting a little bit more than our share of rain right now. Hope it's beautiful where you are. Sunny skies and all that sort of thing. Ah, yes, indeed. Weather's an important part of our lives. It is mine, anyway. I think that's why I moved to Florida several years ago. Many years ago, actually. Now. Got tired of those 5 months of gray skies every year living up north. So it is a little different here having all this rain right now. But enough for the weather. How are you today? Glad to have all of you along with us. I see the chat rooms rolling along there at Head On Radio Network chat room and the Tom Hartman chat room, and we're going to try and give you an entertaining show today. I'm the proud owner, since UPS arrived this morning, of the new Conservatives Without Conscience book by John Dean. Got a chance to read the preface and a little bit of the book. As always, John's writings are fantastic, and we'll talk a little bit about the book today. But, got the old doorbell rang this morning, and there it was. And always glad to get books. We have lots of books. My, oh, my, do we have lots of books. I wish I had time to read even more. But the publishers, when they come out with, you know, the new ones they want to push, and you're trying to get people on your show, why, they send you a complimentary copy of the book, and so we don't have to spend a lot of money on books, but it's good to have them. We've got quite a library, that's for sure. Let me see. What else were we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the flip-flopping going on. Have you noticed? Isn't it something? Isn't it something how the right-wing media can take something like, and you all remember the flip-flop thing about John Kerry back during the 2004 election, how they used that with such great effectiveness on him, as if changing one's mind was a horrible thing to do. And now we have Bush administration making a, well, I don't know if they know where they're going on the Iraq war, but here we are having completely changing their attitude about war now. I think it was all but certain we were going to go to Iran. I think they heard the public hue and cry about that, decided maybe it wasn't such a good idea. North Korea, all that going on there right now, and we're not talking about invading North Korea now, are we? No, certainly not. So a little bit of flip-flopping going around there. And all this controversy in the past few days, I noticed on several of the blogs and a couple of the big websites, DU and a couple of other ones, talking about Ed Schultz. And for fear of sounding like sour grapes in here and all that, and I don't really give a damn what anybody thinks, but I'll put my 2 cents worth in on that. You know, he really went off on people that are downing Joe Lieberman the other day. So, you know, Ed Schultz thinks the blogosphere is out to get even with Lieberman because Lieberman gave Howard Dean a hard time in the Iowa primary. the idea of that is ludicrous, first of all. It goes to show you just how much of a real Democrat Schultz really is. And I've talked about this several times on my show, and people seem to get pissed off at me when I do, but I'm not going to stop because I know the facts in this case, and I wouldn't be true to my listeners if I didn't let them know those facts. Schultz doesn't know what the hell he's talking about here, as usual. Not only has Joe Lieberman been with Bush every step of the way on the war, he's been a guest on Hannity's show more times than I care to remember. Hannity even offered to throw a fundraiser for Holy Joe. Did you hear that one that day? I did. How much more information than that do you need to know where Lieberman's loyalties lie? And don't forget last year. It was just last year, I looked this up, where he said, and I quote, "It's time for Democrats who distrust President Bush to acknowledge he'll be the commander-in-chief for 3 more years. We undermine the president's credibility at our nation's peril," end quote. Joe Lieberman. Lieberman even has the endorsement of Ann Coulter. She loves Joe. Of course she does. Lieberman is to the Democratic Party, in my opinion, what Ed Schultz is to the Democratic Party. They're both Democrats, supposedly, but when it's convenient to be Democrats. And the rest of the time, they're looking out for number one. That's just how it is. You don't like it? Tough. Send me an email. Let me know. Call the show, 866-546-5254. But that is my not-so-humble opinion on that situation. Don't trust either one of them. More stories of death and destruction coming out of Iraq, to be sure. I don't know. With all these stories of alleged atrocities taking place in Iraq, one really does have to wonder if there's any kind of psychological screening process for new recruits. We've heard the stories of these past few days of skinheads and Crips and neo-Nazis being in our armed forces. And really, how could this happen? How could it? Of course, the wing nuts will be all over this, pointing out that that such bad news is hurting the morale of the troops, blah, 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 blah. That's how many times we heard that one, no matter what anybody says. Well, it's hurting the morale of our troops. What's hurting the morale is being left in a situation by a bunch of self-serving politicians who are enriching themselves and their buddies by running a war of choice with no cost to themselves and no end in sight. That's what's hurting the soldiers' morale. The men who are involved in this need to be brought before the bar. No question about it, but when are the men who caused this to happen going to answer? The warmongering chicken hawks who basically whispered in the ears of the troops that Iraq was responsible for 9/11, go get some payback. They made this happen as surely as if they had been there doing the raping and killing. This dehumanization of the Iraqis as Hajis and the building mistrust and anti-American sentiment are a natural outgrowth of the lack of foresight and planning that the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue crew is known for 5 years into their mismanagement of America. When these men go before a military judge, so should our beloved leader and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rove and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Powell and explain why they should not be dragged before a military tribunal and charged with violation of federal and military law for crimes against the Constitution and our nation. If there is, in fact, still justice for all, if that's still available in our nation, it should be brought to bear against these men. For every one of them I just mentioned is guilty of helping to bring about an illegal, immoral, unnecessary war. Each of them is responsible for the deaths of over 2,500 of our military and for the deaths of countless thousands of innocent Iraqi lives. And if it turns out that the recent atrocity that took place against that young girl and her family, if it turns out that that is true, then Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, Rove, Wolfowitz, Pearl, and Powell are just as guilty as the perpetrators. They may as well have been standing there watching it happen because it was they who made the conditions right for this to happen. I try, but I cannot hide my contempt for these men. I've tried to be fair. I've really tried to be fair, because I don't think you can truly call yourself a liberal without having a proper sense of fairness about you. So I've tried mightily to be fair. But along with many of you, I've reached my limit with these people. They're guilty of war crimes, of crimes against humanity, and of crimes against the people of the United States and the nation of Iraq. I've always been a proud American, but I'm not proud of my government right now. The people leading this country have betrayed the trust of the American people and have squandered the good name of the United States all around this world. Slobodan Milosevic was being held for a trial for committing war crimes. And in my opinion, these men have committed no less a crime than Milosevic. And that might sound extreme to some of you, but just because thousands were led to slaughter under the flag of the United States doesn't make it any less of a crime than that of Milosevic. What we now have to contend with, and if any of you saw the interview last night on Tweety Bird Show, are those 23% of the American people John Dean speaks about in his new book. And we've got the new book here, and we're going to talk about it a little later today, and we're going to have him on the show very soon. Middle of next week. But the 23% who would follow any authoritarian figure over a cliff if asked to do so. And there's plenty of studies to show that this is true. 23% of the people would follow Bush, Cheney, Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot. Any murderer that you can name in the history of this country would follow them into hell and back. They would follow them no matter what. Those people really are the sheep, and no matter what their leader tells them to do, they do it with pride. Their leaders always depend upon hate to control the people. They got to always have a boogeyman to blame for all the ills. With Hitler, it was the Jews. With the modern-day neocons, their boogeymen are the liberal. Whatever's wrong in the world is the fault of the liberal, and thus men like Cheney and Rove are able to manipulate and control a very significant number of the people and get them to do their evil bidding. And it's apparent everywhere. You've heard the talk. Are we a fascist nation? As Dean stated last night, we're getting terribly close and getting closer every day. We've heard the lies. We've seen the illegal acts that take us to war. We're seeing the demonization of anyone who dares disagree with them or interfere with their plans. I really believe if Jesus Christ were here today, it's they who would have him crucified in order to keep their power. I believe that strongly about it. And don't tell me I'm just a Bush hater. There have been plenty of Republican politicians in my lifetime, and I've not liked the policies of most of them, but the differences were strictly political. With these guys, it's far deeper than that. Far deeper than that. They're criminals. They're criminals needing to be brought to justice. And if the people of the United States don't have the guts or fortitude to make them pay for their crimes, then I hope international justice will prevail. It would bring me to tears to see the political leaders of the United States being brought to The Hague for trial. But if that's what it takes to warn others not to follow in their evil path, then so be it. You should not escape justice just because you're an American. And that leads me to another point. The American soldiers committing crimes in Iraq should be tried in Iraq and in this country. And if these allegations are true, then the Iraqi people should have first crack at them. If you kill innocent Iraqi people, you should go before the justice system in Iraq. I will not defend any soldier against prosecution for crimes committed against the people of another land. It's their people who were murdered. And it is they who should bring justice to those who did these horrible crimes. You heard about the horrible carnage that took place over there yesterday and Sunday. My God, you know, you like to ask when it's going to end. But if left to their own devices right now, it's not going to end. That's the idea. You know, they're asking the UN for help now. You know, all this talk about, well, we're not going to leave Iraq until things are just right and all that. The Iraqis are asking the UN for help after a horribly bloody weekend and amidst an abject failure of the Iraqi government's efforts to crack down on the sectarian violence in Baghdad. The Iraqi politicians are crying uncle. USA Today paper reports today, Sunni politicians on Monday called on the UN Security Council to send peacekeepers to Iraq, saying U.S.-led occupation forces cannot protect Iraqis. Sunni parliament member Ayad al-Samari said U.S.-led forces have failed to provide security in the country. Said occupation forces cannot protect the people and therefore United Nations peacekeepers should be sent to Iraq. And our good friend Juan Cole reported over the weekend that the Iraqi government appears to be on the verge of collapse. And that short stretch of road, that famous short stretch of road to the Baghdad airport, which has been the test of how safe it is in Baghdad on any particular day, it still isn't secure more than 3 years after the U.S. tanks rolled into that city. Several carloads of gunmen drove into the jihad area along the main road to the Baghdad International Airport. Carloads of them. When Zarqawi was killed, another corner was supposedly turned in Iraq. At this point, it's looking more and more like we've turned so many corners that we're going around in circles. Isn't that the case? For the sake of the people of both Iraq and the United States, hell, for the sake of humanity, this madness has got to stop. The Bush administration needs to join the Iraqi government and ask the UN and request them to send immediate assistance. It's clear that the U.S. can't just pack up and leave this folly of its own creation right now, right this minute. But they could leave very, very soon. But we have to have international peacekeepers in there. The U.S. can't shoulder that burden any longer. The only answer and the only way for the U.S. to regain any credibility in the world community is to go ahead and say our mea culpas and ask that the occupation be turned over to a UN-flagged, Arabic-led multinational force. Make no mistake, the U.S. will still have to supply the bulk of the manpower and hardware resources and all that. But we've got to get out of there. We've got to get out of there. Do you think the Bush people would be able to eat crow and ask the UN to come in there and take over now, you think? I doubt it. They haven't done anything right over there yet. I don't see why they should start right now. You know, over the weekend, Arianna Huffington, she was doing some panels on the shows and so forth, and she said in between panels, I ran into Colin Powell and asked him if we're ever going to get out of Iraq. And his answer, just unbelievable. He said, we are, but we're not going to leave behind anything we like because we're in the middle of a civil war. Powell and Jack Murtha both talking about civil war in Iraq. That ought to be headline news, but it isn't, is it? Certainly not. 866-546-5254. We'd enjoy having you call the program today and get your 2 cents worth in. People like to hear your opinions, not just mine, you know. I'd like to hear your opinions. I'd like to hear your opinions on the immunity that our soldiers have and our private, these hired guns that are over there. They've got immunity in Iraq. I don't believe in that. I don't. And it's a newly developing quandary for George Bush. Of course, he'll say no, but by doing so, he proves what everybody knows already, that that puppet government he set up over in Baghdad was never intended to operate, outside of U.S. control. or against U.S. interest. Blanket immunity for the troops and the private contractors. It was simply a cover-your-ass move that never got much traction in the media. But this horrible premeditated rape and murder and corpse mutilation of a 14-year-old girl and the killing of her entire family puts that immunity in a very, very bad light and makes the case, well, it makes the case that this must remain despite this atrocity. It's Bush's worst nightmare is what it is. I say let the immunity go. We got a story in about that. Iraq will ask the United Nations to end immunity from local law for U.S. troops. Who can blame them for that? The human rights minister said on Monday, as the military named five soldiers charged in rape-murder case that's outraged Iraqis. In an interview a week after Prime Minister Maliki demanded a review of foreign troops' immunity, Wigdon Michael said work on it was now underway and a request could be ready by next month to go to the UN Security Council, under whose mandate U.S.-led forces are in control of Iraq. We shall see if the U.S. still has their way with people in the U.N. at that time, won't we? He said we're very serious about that, blaming a lack of enforcement of U.S. military law in the past for encouraging soldiers to commit crimes against Iraqi civilians, such as the alleged rape and murder of a teenager and killing her family. He went on to say we formed a committee last week to prepare reports and put it before the cabinet in 3 weeks. After that, Maliki will present it to the Security Council. We will ask them to lift the immunity, Michael said, and if we don't get that, then we'll ask for an effective role in the investigations that are going on. The Iraqi government must have a role in this, and I cannot blame them for asking. Analysts are saying it's not likely that the United States would ever make its troops answerable to Iraq's chaotic judicial system. Well, they tried Saddam Hussein, didn't they? Oh, sure. A few of his lawyers got killed. But they tried him. This chaos that our invasion and our occupation of Iraq has created, that'll be the excuse for denying the Iraqis justice again. And the media will just turn around and walk away from this story and say it's not reasonable. I think it is reasonable. What do you do? What do you think? Do you think American troops ought to be tried in an Iraqi court? I think they ought to get justice from both ends. And I'm saying it should be justice. I don't want any kangaroo court. I don't want anybody any rush to judgment, anything like that. That's not what we're suggesting at all here. Not at all. We want a fair trial, but we want justice to be done. Justice needs to be done if we're ever going to have our good name restored. I don't know. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Job you take, every heart to break.
Hi, this is Guy. Hi, Dave. I'll be with you right after this one right here. Interesting article sent to me by Terry here in Fort Myers. He had called last week and asked, could Bush be prosecuted for war crimes? And the Nuremberg chief prosecutor says there is a case for trying Bush for the supreme crime against humanity and illegal war of aggression against a sovereign nation. And goes on to say, and you can look us up, it's at alternet.org, of course. The extent to which American exceptionalism is embedded in the national psyche is awesome to behold. While the United States is a country like any other, its citizens no more special than any others on the planet, Americans still react with surprise at the suggestion that their country could be held responsible for something as heinous as a war crime. Well, I'm not surprised, and I don't think we should be accepted from that. Oh, won't the conservatives go nuts when they hear that? How dare you say that any American should be tried for war crimes? Yeah, that's where they'll go with that. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, I've shared with you in the past my rather frightful, horrific views of the reality of why we've invaded and why we're occupying Iraq and Afghanistan, for that matter. And it goes back to the earliest days of PNAC. They had planned it out. It was going to be their global domination trip. They were going to shift extreme wealth, not to the benefit of the country, but to their little Carlyle group, their little cartel. And that is why we are in Iraq, is the way I put it together. They're making a great deal of money. And much of it is coming from the U.S. Treasury into the pockets of the Halliburtons and Bechtels and General Electrics. There is no intention of one calling upon the United Nations to replace them. They have no intentions of coming back. They have no intentions of giving up what they've got. And they are not they are the kind of people, well, you well know, that do not give a damn how many people they have to harm to keep their pockets as full as they want them.
Oh, to be sure. They don't have a conscience when it comes to that. That's a certainty.
No. You know, and you know probably that I go the one step further, that is to justify, to get the people to support them, they brought 9/11 down on us. That's the conclusion I have to come to.
Well, I've never come to that conclusion, but I do very much believe that people, and John Dean says in his new book, by the way, almost missed the start of the show today. I was sitting there reading some of that book. It's such a fascinating read. But he makes the case in there that we might just be fostering terrorism or fanning the flames of it around the world, so that we can stay in a perpetual war, so that these people can keep their perpetual money machine running. You know, that's a sad statement to have to make about the United States government, but I don't even want to call it the United States government. I guess the junior Bush government is what I ought to call it. I ought to leave the United States off of that. These people,
you see them as the criminals that they are.
Oh, they are. There's no question about it. I got to admit, I am very much surprised. I got to read quite a little bit of this book to start out today of John Dean's, and he pulls no punches. He is started out to write this book along with Barry Goldwater years ago. And, you know, of course, Barry had that book, The Conscience of a Conservative, and this, the name of this one's Conservatives Without Conscience. And he and Barry Goldwater were going to write this book in tandem, and then Barry passed away, but he left John access to all of his files and so forth, and he went ahead and wrote this book. But it says something in it that I've said for a long time now. He doesn't use the exact words per se, but these people aren't conservatives. These people aren't Republicans. And Barry Goldwater knew that they weren't real Republicans. They weren't conservatives. Hell, they're not Americans, in my opinion.
They're psychopaths. They're murderers. They are robbers. And they have stolen our country. They have stolen our free press. They've stolen our democracy. And they have no plan of easing up. They want it all.
Yeah, they do. I don't think they... You know, you got to hand it to them, Dave. They haven't hidden it. They haven't hidden it at all. I mean, as secretive as they are, they've been right in your face with, well, we're going to do whatever we want to, and you're not going to stop us. And, you know...
I think their only regret is that they haven't been able to grab Syria and Iran yet.
Yeah, yeah. And if they were left long enough to have the time to do it, why, I believe they would give it every effort. But I am hopeful, anyway, that they won't have the time and opportunity to do it. But, you know, they're patient people. They'll sit back and wait. They've waited a long time to get where they are now. They'll sit back and wait some more if necessary.
No end to their greed. That's what, you know, a void that's never going to be filled there.
No, and, you know, I was speaking to somebody today talking about it. You know, there's this talk about Jeb Bush being pushed for vice president with John McCain. We'll make a deal with you, John McCain. You take Jebby on as be the VP. However, John, you're going to agree that before you run, we'll back you. We'll get you elected. We'll have Jeb as your vice president. But you've got to agree to take just one term and then step aside for Jeb to take over. You know, so all they would have here is a brief respite in a long you know, term of owning the executive office.
Well, you do a justice to this, and I would love to hear you on every station that we're now suffering through with Ed Schultz. I can say that.
Well, I had a bone to pick with Eddie, and I'm going to keep picking it. So, hey, Ed, hey, Dave, thanks for your call.
Don't
Bye.
Get us too confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye now. Yeah, oh, Eddie, back in Lieberman in a big way. Well, you're saying Lieberman's not his candidate, but if you listen to the first part, well, I've got a lot to say about that, and I'll get it said. And, you know, he mentioned a little bit of Afghanistan. Oh, yeah, that war, Afghanistan. You know, that's probably the most prime example of the absolute ineptitude of the Junior Bush crew is what's happening in Afghanistan. And if the Democrats can't get the backbone to point out that even with absolute, totally unfettered carte blanche that Junior Bush and company have royally screwed up the situation in Afghanistan with absolutely almost 100% support for their efforts when they started there, then they need to rethink whether or not they can stand up to the assault that is most certainly coming, most certainly going to come out of Karl Rove's office against anything and everything that the Democrats try and stand for this coming election year. If they don't have the guts to start standing up and pointing out the horrible things that have happened in this war and the administration of both of them by this Bush administration and keep pounding away at it every day, what luck are they going to have in an election this fall? You know, I picked up this little news clip. I mean, you hardly hear of anything in Afghanistan anymore. You hardly hear it. As fighting in Afghanistan has intensified over the past 3 months, the U.S. military has conducted 340 airstrikes there, more than twice the 160 strikes carried out in the much higher profile war in Iraq. And that's according to the data from the Central Command, the U.S. military headquarters for the Middle East. And you don't hear anything about Afghanistan, do you? Because they want to bury that news. Because it's bad news. It's all bad news. There is no good news coming out of Afghanistan either. And this is the war that they went went into with the American public's eyes wide open. Everybody in America said, fine, bin Laden's there, let's go get him. The only thing is, the American people, once again, were misled. They were misled badly. We went there with not enough people to get the job done, and now they've given up, more or less, the special unit looking for bin Laden. Some of these days, and I'm just waiting for it, when someone wants to sacrifice the career, their career in the media, one of these news conferences or something, you know, the question needs to be asked, are there any enterprising reporters out there that might be willing to draw the very obvious parallel between how Junior Bush managed to screw up a war and how he managed to run every single business entity ever touched 6 feet under as well? I don't hear anybody making the comparison. And it was Bush that bragged, you remember, during the time he ran for office. Well, you'll be the first one with an MBA coming into office. I'm a businessman. You know, he failed to mention that he'd failed at every one of his businesses. that's campaigning for you. You can say anything you want to if you got a good enough campaign, and he had a good one. He must have had the best, or a guy like him certainly would never have gotten into office. That's you must wonder. Well, how many of you saw Keith Olbermann last night? I know I did, and I thought he asked John Dean some great questions, some just fabulous questions last night. You know, Keith's no lightweight. Lots of people used to think he was just some comedic, sports-minded talking head, but I think he's proven that he's no intellectual midget. He had a great interview with John Dean last night. He asked Dean, whom, by the way, we will be having on this program very soon, if he asked John Dean if he thought the neocons would stir up terrorism around the world so that they'd be able to convince the American people that they should stay in power to protect the American people from the terrorists whose ranks are growing, obviously, due to the Bush administration's foreign policy. And Dean said yes. And John Dean's got a very good and close perspective on this, believe me. He's not without a great deal of knowledge on this. Let me tell you something he said here in the preface of his book. I was looking at this before the program today. He said, conservatism, and he's talking about real conservatism here. Conservatism is not inherently moralistic, negative, arrogant, condescending, and self-righteous, nor is it authoritarian. Yet all of these are adjectives that best describe the political outlet, the outlook of contemporary conservatism. I make these observations not as an insider, but as a conservative who is deeply troubled by what has become of a treasured philosophy. Conservatism has been co-opted by authoritarians, a most dangerous type of political animal. How do people, particularly those who have never put their lives on the line for their country, how do they engage in or condone attacks on Senator John McCain's life-defining experiences in Vietnam, or POW, or question Senator Max Cleland's courage in building a new life after his loss of three limbs in Vietnam? What causes them to dispute Senator John Kerry's valor during voluntary combat duty in Vietnam, or to contest Representative Jack Murtha's war record in Vietnam? Do they believe that by belittling the competence of White House counsel Harriet Myers by forcing her to withdraw as a nominee for the Supreme Court, that they are engaging in legitimate political debate? Why do they remain silent or even defend a president who has shamed the nation forever by endorsing an unprecedented and unnecessary use of torture against our enemies? These questions have clear answers. My aim is to explain how and why these conservatives operate as they do, with the thought that others may realize that this current breed of authoritarian conservatism, the behavior of both authoritarian leaders and their credulous followers, constitute a hazardous way for politics and governing. In fact, these people cannot be trusted to exercise the powers of government responsibly. Said, I have not written this book with the slightest expectations of ending the vile attacks of these authoritarian conservatives or of changing their Machiavellian attitudes. They cannot be stopped because their behavior is simply a function of the way they are and how they think, their dispositions and the way they deal with the world. However, they can be understood and exposed and watched, and there's compelling reason to do so. While their attacks on me and my wife may be considered harmless in the scheme of things, their larger undertaking is of great concern. And he goes on to talk about the attacks that these nutcase right-wingers made upon John Dean and his wife. And yes, to answer the folks on the chat rooms, that is John Dean of Watergate fame. It is. We're going to pause for a short break right now, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Country. pretty in the fall. Hey, Mac, look out. Mac calls back, Billy, I'll be careful. I'm sure they built them to stand so tall. 19 miles to Baghdad. They fall and were called the yellow ribbon around something. Something good has begun.
And we're back, and you are listening to The Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon here on this rainy, cloudy afternoon here in Southwest Florida. Hope it's nice where you are, all the way across the country. Welcome to all the folks on the Head On Radio Network chat room and the Tom Hartman chat room and the folks over at Democratic Underground. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon on The Guy James Show. You're certainly welcome to give us a call. We hope you will. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I've never understood why people are hesitant to call into a talk show. Of course, doing what I do, I guess I wouldn't understand that. But people's number one fear is to talk in public, a lot of people. So anyway, that's just how it is. But we do hope you'll call in. Again, that's 866-546-5254. So many times, when you look back over this administration, over the 5-plus years that they've been in power, you find people of their ilk and them and themselves made statements early on that now look totally ridiculous. Lawrence Kaplan made remarks to the Carnegie Council back in March 5th of 2003. He said, in many respects, the most interesting aspect of the war in Iraq is really the intellectual fissures that have been revealed here at home in the United States. This is a war of ideas in a real sense. The war hadn't started yet, but so, you know, let's turn ahead the clock 3 years and how many months later, 3 years and 3 months later, and Kaplan says again, more of his words, even by the degraded standards of everyday life in Baghdad, this report from CNN's Nick Robertson comes as a shock. One international official told me of reports among his staff that a 15-year-old girl had been beheaded and a dog's head sewn into her body in its place, and of a young child who had had his hands drilled and then bolted together before being killed. Robertson's dispatch points to a revolting truth about the war in Iraq, one that American officers discovered long ago, but which has yet to penetrate fully the imaginations of theoreticians writing from a distant remove. The fact is, there's very little that we can do to dampen the sectarian rage and pathologies tearing Iraq apart at the seams. Lawrence Kaplan. Well, now, Larry, I wonder if you remember your War of Ideas quote. The liberation of Iraq sure isn't helping them out, is it? Certainly not. And yes, you know, there's this little problem they've got right now. Kim Jong-il, if you don't know a little bit about Kim Jong-il these days, I guess you've been living under a rock. Everybody knows a little something about him, about how he's a madman and all the various big lies that they've... You know, he's the son of a god, his father was a god, therefore he sees himself as a god in Korea. Wonder what kind of a psyche do you have to be think of yourself as a god or a son of a god? Wonder what you do. You wake up every morning and I don't know, you put your clothes on the same way. I don't know. This seems like a weird idea that you would think of yourself as a god or related to God or whatever. But you know, we've got North Korea and Kim Jong-il, and the boy appears to have a few nukes, and he might have some sort of capability of delivering them to either some of our friends or maybe even to us. And this is something the Cheney administration probably should have thought about before they took their shiny new doctrine of preemptive war out for a test drive over in Baghdad. But they didn't. It seems to me that when you launch an aggressive war after going through the motions of diplomacy, your opponents are really entitled to assume that you're likely to do it again in a similar situation. Why shouldn't Kim Jong-il right now and Ahmadinejad over in Iran, why shouldn't they be thinking that the United States is coming after them? Tell me, why shouldn't they? Do they have any reason not to think the United States won't come at, unless they're going to go ahead and try and, you know, play a poker game with the United States here, play a game of chicken with us. But after watching what happened to Saddam Hussein in Iraq, you know, this is a ludicrous part about this whole thing. The government was bragging, you know, when he came up with this Axis of Evil stuff and all, and then Muammar Gaddafi turned over his weaponry and all that sort of thing and stopped his nuclear program, which really, really and truly wasn't anything at all. He had a bunch of used equipment he'd bought from Pakistan, which was basically a pile of junk and not capable of producing nuclear weapons. We knew that all along. But this Gaddafi thing, the Bushes have been bragging about it. How, oh, see, we intimidated Gaddafi into being a good boy now. Now he's our pal. Hey, I got news for you. That whole Gaddafi thing was ginned up by the Bush administration that they had intimidated him. That deal with Gaddafi was done a long time before they said it was. They didn't intimidate him into anything. Nothing. And so the whole point of this is, if you're Ahmadinejad in Iran, and if you're Kim Jong-il in North Korea, you see what happened to Saddam Hussein, why aren't you going to arm yourselves to the teeth? Why aren't you going to protect yourselves against the great Satan of the United States of America? Why not? I don't understand the administration's thinking on this. I never will. It just seems to me that these guys are, I mean, crazy as they are, if you want to call them crazy, they're not going to lay down and say, well, fine, just we won't do it anymore. We'll be good boys. I don't know. But I think they've made war more likely by doing this. You know, if you believe your diplomatic gestures completely insincere, your opponents might just choose defiance. And at that point, you can either follow through on your so-called doctrine, or you can suffer an enormous loss of credibility. And without credibility, you've got nothing to bet on this, you know, to use for chips in this international game of poker that we're going through right now. So Kim Jong-il is probably sitting over there laughing right now. He'd probably test another one or two of those missiles before long. And what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it? You know, this in turn can lead other players like those pesky global energy markets to ratchet up their perception of the risk of war, which in turn provides ammunition to those on your side who argue that the war has become the lesser of two practical evils, you know. They'll argue that if you want to bring those oil prices down, you got to send in the Air Force. That's worked real well in Iraq so far, hasn't it? I don't know. But I'm not entirely sure that maybe the saner members of this regime, like possibly Secretary Rice, I think she recognized the bind they're in right now, and I'm reasonably sure that the vast majority of the American people don't realize the bind that we're in at the moment. And the corporate media, well, you've seen they're in the control of the Bush administration. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future results right now on this world stage, and war with Iran is not inevitable. But if the war does come, don't expect to see the prices of a gallon of gas come down anytime soon. After all, we did hear similar promises voiced by similar sources before Shrub's first preventative war, and look how well that worked out. How much was gas when the Iraq War started? What, I don't know, about $1.39, something like that. Somewhere in that neighborhood, $1.50. I'm not exactly sure. wasn't anywhere near what it is right now. Not even close. I think after the top of the hour, we don't have much left in this first hour. I think after the top of the hour, we'll talk about a little bit about this flip-flopping that this administration has been doing. And we hope you'll give us a call after the top of the hour. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Did any of you, I did want to mention today, and I'm particularly disgusted by this. Did anybody see that disgraceful performance by 36th District of California Democratic Representative Jane Harman last night? Tweety Bird had her on, and he asked her twice about whether or not she lost faith in the judgment of Junior Bush, and she refused to say that she has. So one can only surmise that she is once again kissing Junior Bush's ass for some reason or another. Whose fault is it that we've got a Bush apologist as the Democratic representative elected from California's 36th District? What's wrong with the Democratic voters there? They had a damn good alternative to Harmon's butt-kissing ways this year, and Marcy Winograd. We had Marcy on this program. She was a great candidate. But they threw this so-called Democrat back into Congress. What's wrong with the people in our party nowadays? Why couldn't the people in the 36th District of California see that Jane Harman has done nothing but play ball with George Bush all the way down the line? Oh yeah, last night she had a couple little minor objections. She's on the Homeland Security Commission, and she did a little bit of harping about not being well enough informed by Bush on security matters, but she basically defended his keeping information from the committee. And she basically goes along with all of his secrecy plans and all that. I was shocked though over that. I mean, I can't say I was shocked. I mean, she's a 2-3 time in, I don't know how many years she's been in. But I thought Ms. Marcy Winograd would have a good chance to knock her off for that seat out there, but it was not to be. And same way in Chicago with Sigalis. The DNC, not the DNC, actually the DLC, hard at work, putting in the people they want, not the people the people want. Such is the case in the Democratic Party right now. I guess as you can tell when listening to this program lately, I'm a bit perturbed by the Democrats. They're not getting a whole lot done right now. And here we are in an election year, and they don't appear to be cohesive at all. They don't appear to have a solid plan. We've got Democrats running willy-nilly all over the place on the same issue. We've got this Lieberman problem. I don't know. I'm not very happy about the Democrats right now. Are you? If you are, I hope you'll give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We do hope you'll give us a call and let us know your opinions. My goodness, the phones must be out of order today. We're having just one of those days. Maybe it was the lightning. I don't know, but it's sure not ringing very much. I guess we should give something away free. That would... That always makes the phones ring. I should give away a book or something free. but I'm not going to. I said that magic word, and everybody's ears perked up, I'm pretty sure, when I said that free word. But anyway, hang loose. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
Network. At least 135 people are dead, more than 250 injured following a series of explosions on commuter trains in India's financial capital of Mumbai during today's afternoon rush hour. Mumbai is a city formerly known as Bombay. The Pentagon has announced a change of policy and says that in accordance with the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling, all detainees held by U.S. military, including those at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, are now covered by the protections of an article of the Geneva Conventions that bars inhumane treatment. North Korea's deputy foreign minister says that Pyongyang is willing to return to six-party talks on its nuclear program if the United States drops financial sanctions against it. The U.N. Security Council vote on a proposal calling for sanctions has been delayed at China's request. More violence in Iraq, where 15 people were killed today, 10 of them by gunmen who attacked their van, which was en route to a funeral. An Al-Qaeda group in Iraq is claiming that three GIs murdered last month, two of them after being kidnapped by insurgents, died in retaliation for the rape and murder of an Iraqi teenager and her family in Mahmoudiya in March. Six GIs have been charged with those crimes. Like the three murdered soldiers, they were all part of the same army unit. Closing arguments in the trial of Saddam Hussein and six co-defendants is in recess once again, this time for 2 weeks. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is in Afghanistan, where he is reaffirming U.S. support for the government and predicting that the Taliban will not succeed. The U.S. still has 22,000 troops in Afghanistan. A federal judge has ruled that the FBI's unprecedented search of Congressman William Jefferson's House office in May was legal. Jefferson, who is the target of a bribery investigation, plans to appeal. Iran is sticking to its timetable for responding to the European Union's incentives proposal and says despite pressure from the West, it will not give its answer before this weekend's G8 summit. Iran has said it needs more time until next month to consider the proposal, which offers a number of incentives if it suspends its uranium enrichment program. Pakistani investigators have recovered the black boxes from a Pakistan International Airlines plane that crashed yesterday, killing all 45 people aboard. The 40-year-old Fokker F-27 turboprop crashed on the outskirts of Multan just minutes after takeoff. If Congress passes a bill to expand federal funding of stem cell research, President Bush will issue the first veto of his presidency. That, according to White House advisor Karl Rove, the bill has already passed the House and is expected to also receive the Senate's approval. And former CBS News anchor Dan Rather has a new job, a new program at HD Next. Business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience. But it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
An environmental group says much of the tuna imported into the U.S. from south of the border has mercury levels higher than allowed by the federal government. Defenders of Wildlife says Mexico and Ecuador are the biggest offenders. On the other hand, tuna from Asia has the lowest levels of mercury. The White House is touting its revised estimate that the federal deficit for 2006 will only be $300 billion, not the $423 billion forecast earlier this year. The Democrats say a $300 billion deficit is nothing to brag about. Microsoft says there's an 80% chance that its next-generation operating system, Windows Vista, will be ready in January. The price of gas continues to go up. The national average now $2.97 a gallon. That's 65 cents higher than a year ago and not far below the highest price ever, which is $3.07 a gallon, a record reached last September after Hurricane Katrina. Google plans to build an office and research center in Ann Arbor, Michigan that will have up to 1,000 employees. Starting in November, Nielsen Media Research is going to start measuring how many people watch TV commercials. A new survey shows that small business owners are losing faith in the U.S. economy and are scaling back plans to hire workers and make capital expenditures as a result. And Lorillard Tobacco has reached an agreement with 31 states to prevent illegal cigarette sales through the mail and the Internet. Light Sweet crude oil is trading at $74.45 a barrel this hour, up 84 cents. The Dow is down 28. NASDAQ is down 9. The S&P 500 is down 3. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Probably went out to the fridge and got yourself a cold cola or whatever you have to drink. Maybe even a cold one, if you know what I mean. That sounds pretty good right now. Hope you're having a good afternoon. Here we are at... Well, just slightly past halfway through the program today. Got a little echo going. There we go. That should take care of that. Talked to the engineer over there. Hey, did you hear the story during the news there? They're talking about, first of all, small business people being discouraged with the economy and scaling back plans to hire people. Let me tell you something. Despite the propaganda coming out of the White House and the Bush administration for these past months over how great this economy is, and they actually used the term a few times. I heard it on Fox, white hot economy. I love that one. Let me tell you something. I don't know any big businessmen, but I do know a considerable number of small business people. A considerable number. That would be my circle of friends. And I can tell you that they're hurting. Almost every one of them is hurting. Yes, people are scaling back plans to hire people. People are scaling back plans to buy more inventory and remodel and do this and that that they would ordinarily do. Buy a new truck for the business or put in a different line. It's tough in small business right now. And those who think that this great Bush economy is just rolling along have got no idea, or else the only people they care about are the Carnegies, the Mellons, and the Rockefellers. I don't know. It's amazing to me that the economy for average Joe in this country can be so bad, and yet it's hardly spoken about in the media. Yes, unemployment numbers are what they are. The numbers show pretty good, actually. But so you work at Kmart or Walmart, and you're making $8 an hour or $7 an hour, or however much they agree to pay you right now. And you got to work two jobs, whereas 5 years ago you were working one job. You lost your good job because your company moved out of town. Moved out of the country, as a matter of fact. So you lost your good job, and now you're working two jobs. That makes those unemployment figures look real well. But when you look at the spending power of your money now as opposed to 5 years ago, doesn't look so good, does it? The spending power you have right now is less than it was when Mr. Bush came into office. And yet these people had the unmitigated gall last week to turn down a raise in the minimum wage. And what it must be like, let's draw a little picture for you here. Clinton turns the reins over, hands the bank book over to George Bush, and it's got a positive balance in it. The deficit has gone down, and they're paying down the national debt, and so he hands the bank books and the checkbook over to Mr. Bush, and it's, we're in the black. And so things don't go quite right. And the budget deficit becomes $100 billion, $200 billion, $300 billion, $400 billion, $500 billion. And then, well, wait a minute, it's not quite that bad. It's only $300 billion. Are we supposed to feel good about that? Because that's what this latest thing coming out of the Bush administration, these people are desperate to rescue their party's sagging poll numbers. And Bush and his congressional Republicans today You know, I'm flabbergasted by this, if I may use that word, and I do now and then. It's laughable at what these people try and do. They come out with this news today to cast America's approximate $300 billion deficit as good news. So I guess if gas is selling for $1.50 a gallon, and it goes up to $6 a gallon, and then back down to $4, we're supposed to, well, aren't we lucky? I mean, that's the same thing as they're doing right here. We thought we were going to have a $400 or $500 billion budget deficit, and it's only $300 billion, which is $300 billion more than it was during the Clinton administration when they handed over the reins to these people. And he gives a speech, and the Republicans, they applaud the speech. They, you know, they can't hide from the fact that they've done nothing but rubber stamp this president's failed special interest agenda that ignores the needs of America's hardworking families. They can't hide that. I already told you about the minimum wage law last week, and you know, Ted Kennedy's fought for that. And let me reiterate one more time, regardless of what you think about Ted Kennedy, warts and all, his personal life hasn't been perfect, but I want to tell you one thing. If there's ever been a better champion for the working man in this country, in the Congress of the United States, in the United States Senate, I'd like to know who it is. He's tried. Oh, he tried on this minimum wage thing. Can't do it by himself. But there's an editorial in today's New York Times. I don't know how many of you read the Times. I do every day. But it provides a dose of reality by noting that under President Bush, under his watch, triple-digit budget surpluses have turned into an annual triple-digit budget deficit. And in addition, the editorial notes that the administration provided a highly inflated deficit projection, which allowed the White House to spin the actual deficit of approximately $300 billion as good news. So that's what they did. They lied. They knew the deficit wasn't going to be $500 billion, but they said it would. 456 or whatever they projected it would be. And they knew it wouldn't be that high. They knew it would be about what it is right now. But they said it would be 456. And when it didn't get that high, they thought, geez, aren't we doing a good job? It's only $300 billion. So we've actually saved you $156 billion. And let me read you a couple excerpts from the New York Times editorial today. It said the release of the White House mid-season budget review is an annual event normally marked by a few wonkish observations and the routine updating of various spreadsheets, not by a full-dress presidential dog and pony show. This is out of the Times. By all indications, including his own in his weekly radio address last Saturday, he plans to turn this into a celebration just in time for the fall campaign. Hey, folks, congratulations. Pat us on the back. We've only got a $300 billion deficit after all. Damn, ain't that good? Why, you thought we were really horrible and was going to have a $456 billion budget deficit, but it's only $300, so we're pretty good. It just goes to show you one more time that these people look upon the American public as a bunch of idiots. And I guess we know that approximately 23% of the American public are complete, absolute idiots. And I'm talking about that 23% that John Dean's talking about in this authoritarian study that they had done that would follow Bush over a cliff if necessary. What do you do with people like that? I guess by now most of you have learned what you do with people like that. Don't talk to them. Don't talk to them about anything political or anything that means anything at all, because you're not going to get anywhere. That's why, you know, a segue into this, but get away from this New York Times story for a second. That's why these religious evangelicals are so dangerous. You know, compromise is a part of the fabric of American government and how we do things. And with this authoritarian reasoning that they're using now to follow, no matter what the consequences, we follow our leader, we stay the course, we follow him on. You know, that makes them particularly dangerous because these right-wing evangelicals, there's no gray. It's black and white to them, and it's going to be their way or the highway, and that makes them, in my mind, particularly dangerous. But to go on to this Times article, so this is proof, if anyone still needs it, that this administration is desperate for something to boast about. On Mr. Bush's watch, triple-digit budget surpluses have turned into an annual triple-digit budget deficit. The razzle-dazzle won't end there. As he did in his remarks on Saturday, Mr. Bush is sure to use today's event to credit tax cuts for a projected surge in tax revenue, even with this year's budget. And with this year's bigger haul, real revenue growth during the Bush years will be an abysmal, averaging about 0.3% per capita versus an average of nearly 10% in all previous World War II business cycles. In other words, the growth during his administration has been 1/30 of what it has during the others in the post-World War business cycles, 1/30. So the revenue surge is neither a sign that the tax cuts are working, and that's really what they wanted to show here. They wanted to show you, see, we gave those tax cuts to the rich, and that's what's really helped out this budget deficit. That's what their plan was, folks. Because they say all along, every time they've got a big tax cut coming up for the rich, they always say, well, this is going to up the revenues. This is really going to help us out. It's never panned out one time. They've tried and tried and tried to turn the figures upside down, inside out, and make it look like a big tax cut for the rich has helped out the revenue and the deficit and the American economy in general, and they've never been able to prove that one time, not once. And then we heard today, by the way, you can call us, you know, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. How about this news about the Supreme Court upholding the right of the FBI to go in to the congressional offices? You know, at first blush, when they went in and got Jefferson's computer, his hard drive, and all that kind of thing, I thought, you know, maybe that isn't such a good idea to be raiding the congressman's office, because that might give the executive branch some ideas. You know, some president like Bush might be saying, hey, you know, call up the FBI and say, I know I don't like what Congressman so-and-so on the Democratic side is doing. How about you just go in there and raid his office and, you know, you'd be able to get him on something. That's what I was thinking at first. And then I thought, no, there's a, and I'll tell you what made me change my mind was Denny Hastert coming out and defending Jefferson. I smelled a rat right there when Denny Hastert defended Jefferson on this, because now it's apparent that Denny Hastert and the Republicans don't want anybody coming in raiding any more offices in the House because of the name Jack Abramoff. You know, and as they say, when there's smoke, there's fire. You know, with all the tentacles that guy and the webs that guy has weaved throughout the Washington, lots of people on the take from Jack Abramoff. You know there are some more hard drives, some more information in those congressional offices, Republican offices, I might add, because the Democrats are not on his payroll. That's why Denny Hastert stood there and defended you know, wanted to keep the FBI out of the halls of Congress. That's why. Wasn't anything to do with protecting Congressman Jefferson, who, by the way, if they find out he's guilty of this, he had that $90,000 in his fridge, it doesn't look all that good to me. Why, haul his ass to jail, mate. You know, put him and Duke Cunningham and Jim Traficant, make them all cellmates. Put them all together. They can swap lies with one another about how they screwed the American public. I don't care whether he's a Democrat or Republican. It doesn't make me a bit of a to partner with Bush administration in spying, providing information, and in general become another tool for the state security apparatus to use. He even assured the Chamber of Commerce that businesses who co-opt themselves and their employees and customers to the intelligence community would be protected. Am I dreaming? Is something like this really going on in this country? Negroponte, the the head sleuth in this country, I guess you'd call him. Oh, he's over the CIA. He's over the whole business. He's telling the Chamber of Commerce that businesses who help them spy on their employees and customers to the intelligence community will be protected. Negroponte also asserted that the intelligence community's relationship with the private sector has been strained by leaks of national security information to the media. He did not cite specific examples, but said the intelligence community will work to protect the confidentiality of arrangements with private companies. You know, there's no surprise there, since Junior Bush signed a presidential memorandum on May the 5th, that was on the eve of the breaking NSA phone record story, allowing companies to conceal their cooperation with the government in domestic spying programs. And Negroponte went on to say, cultural and institutional barriers remain a problem with sharing information. He said, we have to instill a new culture. Oh, God. We have to instill a new culture, if you will, of people who are willing to share and move information horizontally across the intelligence community. This is... If you listen to the Keith Olbermann and John Dean interview from yesterday evening countdown, you understand that the Bush administration has been working really hard to instill such a culture. And as Dean was talking about, they've been very successful at fostering this authoritarian government program, such as Negroponte is describing here. So my question is to John Negroponte and to George Bush and to Dick Cheney. I should never address anything to Dick Cheney. I mean to George Bush. Hell, he doesn't know any answers to anything we'd ever ask him. My question is, if Negroponte's out making the speeches to the Chambers of Commerce and small businessmen, say, hey, you guys cooperated with you, help us spy on your customers and your employees and everything, and we'll treat you right if you get my drift. My question to Negroponte is, what about the kids? You see, I think Negroponte is being negligent here. What about the kids? What about sending some government officials to every grade school in America armed with some candy bars, maybe some DVD players, some CDs, you know, all the stuff the kids really like nowadays, maybe some new tennis shoes. Kind of like some of the folks did about 70 years ago over in Europe. Remember that? They talked to the kiddies and convinced some of them that their mommies and daddies were doing some bad things that Herr Hitler didn't approve of. And that the nice Mr. Hitler needed the help of the boys and girls to find out who was naughty and who was nice. And if they helped the nice man, they'd be treated really good. It works fine then. And if Negroponte and Cheney and Bush play their cards right, it'll work right now. Solicit the kids. Send your spies to every school in America right now. Particularly send them to these private schools where they'll play ball with the government, that's for sure. These for-profit schools. Send the FBI guys, send the CIA, Negroponte, send anybody you want. Send them out to the schools and talk to the little kids. You know, you don't have to go around and give speeches to the Chamber of Commerce. Go to the kids. Give them some candy and bubble gums and tennis shoes, whatever you have to give them. Now, you know, and you can tell them they won't have to spy on mommy and daddy's phone calls. They've already taken care of that. And when you go through their mail, you won't have to report on their bank statements. We got that covered, too. Just let us know what books they're reading, you know, who comes over to the house and what they watch on TV. You know, that kind of stuff. That's what it's coming to, folks. That's where this is going if you fail to see that you're being willfully blind. People over in Europe 70 years ago just thought the nice man was looking out for them too. Didn't work out too well for quite a few of them, did it? That's next. When is the kiddie corps going to come along? The kiddies, is, you know, they're going to have a program for the kids in the CIA and the FBI and whatever, the NSA, all the spying organizations. They'll probably have little uniforms for them and all, and give them gold stars on their chart if they come in and spill the beans on mommy and daddy for doing this, that, and the other thing. That's what it's coming to. You think I'm kidding? Negroponte out giving speeches to the small businessmen and the Chamber of Commerce that play ball with us? You think that isn't next? Did the people of that country, that country in Europe 70 years ago, did they see this coming? Not at all. Did they think it was okay to go around and intimidate people and have their kids spy on them? No, they thought that was all right. After all, they were weeding out some undesirables. It was okay. Didn't have to worry about it. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
This is Noam Chomsky. Strong evidence suggests that the Bush administration launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, targeted civilians and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is...
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. Watching the valley, who's in charge of it all? God bless the army, and God bless our liberty. That comes the rest of it all.
Hey, a minute position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse.
Let's get out of Iraq, get back on the track, and let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
And we're back with the Guy James Show, and you've still got time to call in the program, 866-546-5254. We hope you will do that. You know, it's not a great talk show with me doing all the talking. And speaking of the phones, let's go to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Terry in Fort Myers.
Hi, Terry.
The lady that just called in, I don't know where she's located or anything. One thing that she might try, because it works for court, is... she probably would need a picture, so if she could get a digital camera and take a picture of her mother and then print off, you know, load it into a computer and then print off 4, 5, 6 copies of it or whatever. Then what she needs to do is go and put together an affidavit. Okay, having her mother, having this affidavit state her mother's name, who her parents were, where she was born, what time she was born, what date, and all that stuff. Just give a rundown of that along with that picture. Take it down and then have her sign it in front of a notary. And have her swear to the notary that that affidavit is true. At that point, then take the affidavit, the notarized affidavit, take it down to the county recorder and record it into the public register. Then get a stamped copy from the county recorder that it was put in there. Now you have an official government document. That document, and I'd probably what I would do is I would not let go of that document because you have to give the county an original. What I would do then is take it back to the notary and have the notary make several copies of that document and notarize that they are, that the notary themselves made the copies and put their seal on it, and those copies are the same thing as originals. But keep the original from the county in a very safe place. And then use those copies to give to whomever you need to give to for verification.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a court, any time that you put an affidavit into the a notarized affidavit, sworn affidavit into the public register, and then you get a copy stamped by this county, and then you enter that into the court, the judge must take judicial notice. And so that would be my recommendation.
Okay, well, I hope she's listening, and it's all over my head, so I hope she gets some information from that, and if she missed it, she can go to the archives and play it back and hear it again. Hey, thanks, Terry.
You're very welcome. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come all you black and Hispanic boys, we'll keep you poor so you got no choice but to join the army in your prime. We'll fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
all these implements and texts designed by intellects of X to find. Evidently there's so much that hides. And though the saints are but divine in ancient feeding lines, their sentiment is just as hard to pluck from the vine. Rhymes that helped us out and make a sense of our lives. The cruel, uneventful state of apathy releases me. I value them, but I won't cry every time one's wiped out.
A friend of mine came up to me the other day and she said,
"I understand what you're saying, Mr. Speaker, but what can I do about it? I can't do anything."
Well, if you believe that, folks, we've already lost. But the truth is, This is a democracy. Every voice counts. Just when I thought my voice didn't count, it showed up on the AP Network News. So don't ever think your voice doesn't count. I'd like to give you a few suggestions of what you might do. And the bottom line is this. You've got to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. How many of you have ever written to your congressman? It takes about 5 minutes of your time. And most of them have emails now, so you can just go on your computer, email it right to them. How many of you have ever written a letter to the editor? I've had about a 30% success rate writing to my local newspaper, so give that a try. How many of you have ever called into your local talk radio show? That's kind of fun to do. If you're afraid, hey, I'm afraid every time I call in. But if you let your fear rule you, then we've already lost. Remember what you have to do. You've got to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. And for those of you who are really ambitious, run for office. Or just go to your local meetings, go to your school board meetings. Or you can go to some of the local protests. I went to the Portland protest against the logging policies of George Bush. About 3,000 people there. You say you're afraid? A lot of us are afraid. But then it occurred to me, why should I be afraid of free speech in a country that stands for free speech? We can't let our fear tell us what to do. So I decided what I had to do. I had to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. So I've got one last thing I'd like to leave you with. My friend also said,
you guys are always against everything, but what are you for?
So I'm going to just give you the short list of what I'm for. I'm for affordable health care for all Americans. I'm for preserving our Social Security. I'm for cleaning up our air and our water. I'm for fixing our economy. I'm for education for all kids. I'm for affordable housing. I'm for food for the hungry throughout the world. I'm for preserving our free speech. I'm for aid to the disabled. I'm for alternative energy sources and getting off this oil bandwagon. I'm for AIDS research. I'm for civil liberties. I'm for finding ways to get along with the rest of the world instead of always making them our adversaries. Surely in a country as rich as ours, this is not too much to ask. And so I invite you to join me, and let's all speak out. We've got to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. 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 That's what
it's all their fault. They've got some balls. They've got no class. Let's send them back.
It's been 5 years since I've had a raise in pay. Way things are going, I could get laid off any day. Sure is hard
living with all this pain. I know what I need. I need somebody to blame. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some balls.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
My neighborhood library is about to close. The school my kids go to is becoming a joke. Self-serving liberals blame it on corporate tax breaks. But that's propaganda. I know who I should hate. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some balls.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
Who's to blame for the potholes and flooding and drought?
It's all their fault. It's all their fault.
Who's to blame for inflation, unemployment, and everything I'm pissed off about? Who's to blame for the end of the good old days? Who's to blame for the fact that I can't get laid? Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some balls.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back. Send them back. Send them back.
Think twice.